Hosea 12. Ephraim feeds on wind and chases the east wind. Now this figure has been used before, that you will reap the whirlwind because you sow to the wind. And the wind, I think the idea is that you've given your life to that which is just absolutely meaningless, here today, gone tomorrow. Just like Gomer, Hosea's prostitute wife. There she was, using his wealth, using all that he gave her to go and hang out with her lovers, and it was all empty. So they were just chasing the wind, and that is the life of the flesh. He daily lies more and more and multiplies his desolation. They make a covenant with Assyria, and oil is carried into Egypt. So as Gomer lied to Hosea about where she was last night, about what she's doing tonight when she says she's got to be away for the night and all that sort of thing, so did Israel. And it went on and on. It's progressive. He lies daily more and more. So if you're not completely committed to the ways of God, unfortunately, you will slip deeper and deeper into sin. There is an upward spiral and there is a downward spiral. And there is no neutral position. You can't sort of take a break from your relationship with God. They were trying to get agreement with Assyria. They were trying to get agreement with Egypt, trying this way, that way, to have, as they saw it, a good life. Just as Gomer was going after this man and that man and having relationships with all sorts of people. And just as we can do, spend our life trying to get rich this way and get stability that way and have this ideal relationship and that beautiful house and that ideal kitchen and all the rest of it. But it is all feeding on wind and chasing the east wind. Yahweh has a controversy with Judah and will punish Jacob according to his ways. According to his deeds, he will repay him. Well, yes, that's how God felt, and that is how Hosea felt about Gomer. And yet elsewhere we read that God did not punish his people as their iniquities deserved. Just as we read in chapter 11, that God's heart was breaking. Part of him wanted to condemn them. Part of him wanted to kill them and slay them. And yet he also had a part of him that loved them and would not do that because he loved them. So now he talks about Jacob. In the womb, he took his brother by the heel, and in his maturity, he had power with God. He struggled with the angel and prevailed. He wept and made supplication to him. He found him at Bethel, and there he spoke with us, even Yahweh, the God of armies. Therefore, you also turn to your God, keep grace and justice, and wait continually for your God. Well, I think Jacob is being set up here as our example, because he was weak, very weak, and he tried to do it in his own strength. He struggled with the angel, but eventually he gave in and he limped the rest of his life. He struggled with the angel and prevailed. That is, in the end, his fighting against God changed. And instead of fighting the angel, he just grabbed hold of the angel and begged him for grace and mercy. And God accepted that, despite him being so deceitful to Esau. Therefore, you also turn to your God. We've got to go through the path of Jacob, and God is asking Israel to likewise go through it. A merchant has dishonest scales in his hand. He loves to defraud. This is again alluding to how God's people were deceitful to him, as Gomer was deceitful to Hosea. And it's that dishonesty, that lack of integrity, which is of course so hurtful to someone who loves someone else, but that person is being dishonest to them. And we've got to have integrity with God. That doesn't mean not sinning. It means being open with God about our weakness. Ephraim said, "Surely I have become rich. I found myself wealth. In all my wealth they won't find in me any iniquity that is sin. But I am Yahweh your God from the land of Egypt." So he's justifying himself. Just like Gomer did. She slept with other men and got money from them. Justified herself. And again, it's this pride which is the problem that stops repentance. And of course, Jacob is quoted earlier in the chapter as the example that he did eventually humble himself. And this was God's hope for his people as it was Hosea's hope for Gomer. I will yet again make you dwell in tents, as in the days of the solemn feast. So God's hope was that they would return to how they were when they came out of Egypt and entered into covenant with him, just as that was Hosea's hope for Gomer, that things would go back to how they were at the beginning. I've spoken to the prophets, multiplied visions, and by the ministry of the prophets used parables. God tried every which way he could to appeal to them, just as Hosea had done to Gomer, just as God does to us. In Gilgal, they sacrifice bulls, their altars are like heaps in the furrows of the field. Jacob fled into Syria, and Israel served to get a wife, and for a wife he kept sheep. By a prophet, Yahweh brought Israel up out of Egypt, and by a prophet he was preserved. So God is saying, look, the words of the prophets, the appeal of the book of Hosea, the prophecies of Hosea, has the power to change you and to preserve you. But Ephraim has bitterly provoked anger. Therefore his blood will be left on him, and his Lord will repay his contempt. So despite all God's efforts, despite all Hosea's efforts for Gomer, it still didn't work out. And yet we have been called to be God's faithful woman. And we're trying. And in the end, in the very final end, God's love and his appeal will win. Even though so many individuals have turned away from it, finally, the number of the faithful will be made up. Those who have said yes to him and been faithful to him.